I'm out of my head. Damn, I'd be better off dead. Coming down.
Everyone, Little Mo. Hey, that's my signature now, I think. If anybody doesn't know that, try and open the show with a Little Mo, but hey, it could be worse, right? Well, I want to welcome everybody here today, again, for another session of Hudson Valley Tap Talk. My name is Ken Landon. I'm the owner of Crossroads Brewing Company. I have some interesting folks with me today, and I'm really excited to have them here as guests. And I think I've developed a little bit of a format with this now. We kind of have been going from different brewery to brewery, different sizes within the brew systems out there. So I thought it would be really interesting to bring in some of our local homebrewers and just kind of pick their brains a little bit. And today I'm really, really excited to have Randy Finley and Betsy Cothran here. How are you, folks?
Hey, Ken.
Hey, Ken.
Thanks for joining me on this negative 95 degree day out there. But it's never too cold to talk about beer. This is interesting to me because I homebrewed a very, very long time ago. It's probably 20 plus years. So I'm sure things have changed since then. So, feel free to jump in and just kind of, you know, background systems, sizes and whatnot. And I know, Betsy, you've been doing this a long time.
20 years.
She might be the first female brewer in the Hudson Valley right here.
I don't know. I don't think so. I bought it actually as a kit for my husband, and it sat for a year, and I figured how hard could it be? And it was an addiction instantly. The beer came out good and has been coming out good.
Better and
great,
better.
Better every time.
So you bought the kit for your husband.
Yes.
And you wound up jumping on it.
Yes, I did.
And
he reaps the reward.
Yeah, we talked about that yesterday. Tim's got some racket over there.
Yes, he does.
So 20 years you've been doing it. Randy, how long have you been doing this?
She's got about 15 years on me. I've only been doing it for about five.
5 years.
Yeah.
All right, then. Yeah. So that would put you, let's see, if you're homebrewing a regular basis for that long, how many batches you think you're up to?
Oh, I'm 130-something.
Wow.
Yeah.
And where are you at?
Yeah, I'm probably in the 50.
Nice.
Area. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, it's interesting, I think, to put into perspective, you know, at Crossroads, we brew with a seven-barrel system down at Keegan's. I think it's, I'm sure somebody will correct me if I'm wrong. I think it's a 30. Might be a 20. I know they got some big 80-barrel fermenters, and they double into that often. So it's either a 20 or 30. So the sizes that you guys are brewing on, it's kind of interesting.
It's never enough.
I think that what people should know is whether it's a 20-barrel system or a system as small as what you guys are brewing on, it's still the same procedure, same cleaning. A lot of cleaning. You know, it's for that size, you're not really, like you said, there's never enough. It's always like, that's it. So what are you usually yielding on a homebrew when you kind of, you can put it into, I guess, does it come out in barrels? Do you even get that high? Is it gallons?
No, five gallons.
I know I'm on a 10-gallon boil pot, and I try to shoot for six.
Nice.
I started bottling, and that wasn't very fun. So I went into kegs and small, the Cornelius kegs. I use 3 gallons. So at a 6-gallon batch, it works well in a 10-gallon kettle, and don't have to worry about boil overs and
cleaning up the mess. Sure. And it goes the same?
I'm smaller.
Smaller?
I'm smaller. I'm 5 gallons at a time, and I bottle. I like a bottle. I bottle all the time. I've tried the Cornelius. I have much better luck with the bottling.
Really?
Yes.
And I got to say, I can taste the difference between a carbonated in the bottle as opposed to forced carbonation.
Yes.
At the home level.
At the home level. Yeah, absolutely. No, that's very, very cool. I'm interested to get into more detail about this. Let me play another quick tune. And we'll come back with Betsy and Randy, and maybe we'll open up the phones in a little bit if I can remember how to do that. But stick with us. Go grab a beer. Relax. Okay. We're gonna talk some homebrew stuff here. We're gonna keep it to beer, and we're gonna have some fun. All right. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. Hey, hey, hey. Welcome back. Little Mo for the kids. Yep. That's how we do it. Hey, what could I say? What could I say? It goes good with beer. But welcome back. I'm Ken Landon. I'm hosting the Hudson Valley Tap Talk Show. I do this the third Tuesday of every month. And I was just looking in my book. I think this is the ninth month, believe it or not. It's the eighth or ninth month. I can't really. I might have missed a month, but time really does fly. And I'm amazed that I went over at my guest list. We were just talking while the music was playing. I've had some really interesting people on this show, and I must say it's been fun to have everybody and talk to everybody. In the beginning, I wasn't 100% sure how I was going to be able to handle this. I never did anything like this before, but I think it's working out pretty cool, and we've had some good people. I think that, you know, giving some good knowledge to everybody out there in the brewing industry. And again, I'm happy to have a couple of local homebrewers. And Randy's from Coxsackie, and Betsy's originally from Peekskill, and now she resides in Catskill. So keeping the skill in it, I guess. But I'm gonna start with Betsy. I want the homebrewers, as well as, you know, if anybody's looking to get into this, I think it's become a lot easier, obviously, right, Betsy? I couldn't imagine 20 years ago. I wasn't even doing it that long ago, and you got to be one of the first, you know, that long ago to homebrew. So I mean, I'm sure things are more accessible now and things have come a long, long way. But kind of give everybody, you're setting up to brew. What's your brew schedule like? What would an average, just you decide it's Sunday, we're going to brew today. Kind of give us a rundown on what you're doing.
Well, actually for Christmas every year, I brew four different beers for Christmas gifts. So everyone gets a little flavor. I tend to like lagers. I try and brew a lager or two. Kolsch is one of my favorite beers that comes out the best that I've been able to brew. Usually I brew two beers at a time. I usually try and do a light and a dark together because I have enough equipment to do two beers at a time.
At the same time.
It's just the timing of it.
Right on.
Because every week you're doing bottling or doing your second stage fermentation. So it's all a matter of coordinating that all together. Luckily, I have a big clawfoot bathtub right off my kitchen, and that's my big sanitizer, which is the main thing with home brewing. You have to keep everything clean. That's, I think, the hardest thing about home brewing process is keeping everything sanitized.
It's on every level, the cleaning, yes, aspect of it. People don't really understand.
Not at all.
It's phenomenal, the amount of cleaning that goes into everything you touch is needs to be clean. And even at that level, obviously,
yes,
it's a messy job.
Yep.
You know,
but like I said, I do bottle. I enjoy the bottling as opposed to the kegging. I just have better luck with the bottling, and it's more portable. You can carry it with you easier. I tend to not brew as much in the summer just because of the cooking process. It just heats up the house. So I try and get most of my brewing done in the winter. Although the demand, as I said before, I just can't keep up with the demand in my household.
Yeah, no, I can. I've had some of your beer. It's outstanding, really.
And, thank you.
I was surprised that not that the beer was tasty, but, you know, it's just as hard on that smaller level.
Yes.
To maintain quality, you know, as these bigger breweries. I mean, I actually think there's very, very little room for error. Things can go awry very, very quickly.
Yes.
And I know that I've had that happen to me as well when I was doing it. It doesn't take much. So the Kolsch's and the lagers,
yes,
kind of your favorite style. That's, I think,
yes.
Did you do a brown?
Oh, I do brown, a lot of browns.
I think you did, right, Randy?
Yeah.
Because I tried your brown as well, right?
Yep.
And you brought
I had a
bottle.
Brown too, yes.
So, Randy, you're on a little bit of a bigger system, right? So, what's what,
If you were to talk, talk to Louise, you'd she'd definitely tell you, I'm a person that can't do just something a little bit. I've got to jump in with both feet, otherwise it just ain't right. So, yeah, I started off with buying a chest freezer for my fermenting chamber. With
oh, nice.
A temperature controller
yeah.
with a heater, and I just can't do it a little bit. So. I can brew pretty much year-round. The summer isn't too bad. I use an immersion chiller to chill, and that seems to work real well for me.
Tell me what that is. I'm curious.
It's
I know, you know, with us on our level, it's a submersion?
Submersion chiller.
Tell me what that is.
And this is the story that I've gotten, and, you know, everybody is taught, I think, a little bit different. The critical is to get from boiling to, you know, your pitching temperature at the end of the batch somewhere around 70 degrees as quickly as you can.
As quickly, right.
Mm-hmm. And,
so you crash chilling this.
And it's basically a half-inch copper tubing that I wound around a Cornelius keg, and I got about 50 feet, and I put a garden hose on one end and drain out the other. And in the summertime, I would pump out of an ice chest with a submersible garden pump ice water out of a chest, so I need a couple bags of ice if it's a real hot day to get down to the pitching temperatures. Mm-hmm. But seems to work well. Again, it's 10 gallon. I yield about 6. I try for about 6 gallons out of it.
That's awesome.
And
that's awesome.
I do like the brown ales, and of course, you know, Louise likes the big beer, so got to throw one of those in there once in a while too. So
you got to keep the wife happy.
That's right.
Otherwise, you're not doing this anymore. You're gonna brew beer for me. And I went to 12%.
That's right.
That a girl, Louise. She does like the big beers. That's awesome. Yeah. But I guess each one of you probably has. I'd like to hear a little bit of a story of how things got bad pretty quick. Maybe in one of your first brews, or did you have any incidents like that? That things were just, oh boy.
Well, I've had to pitch or totally toss one whole batch that I really can't put a finger on what went wrong. But obviously, I always had a saying my whole life, I never had a bad beer. Well, that one was a bad one. It wasn't something you'd want. So, again, it's cleanliness. It's the sanitizing and having your schedule. Once you get a brew day set up, I got mine down to about a six-hour brew day. I can come home from work at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and be pretty well cleaned up by 9 o'clock that evening. So,
but still, it's 6 hours.
It's hopping.
Yeah, you're not. You know, you're moving. Moving that beer. I think that's really cool. But it's again a bigger system, smaller system. You know, it's not. It's the same. Just.
Same steps.
I mean,
same,
it's. Yeah. I'm trying to find the words to really describe it. You know, you got to be set up. Like you said, this is a 6 hour day, the 6 hour time frame. This is not. And if something happens, you know, you're going 7, 8, 9 hours sometimes.
Right.
You know, if
oh yeah,
and
could be all night.
It could be all night. Sure.
And
you
if
know.
You're sampling something else along the way, right. It could even be even longer.
Right. Right.
And I think one of the biggest mistakes I made early on was. The curiosity factor would set in, and I couldn't let the beer age enough to reach its full potential. I'd have it gone before, you know. And I think that was probably my worst mistake, is not allowing the beer to sit and become real good beer.
What typically the styles that you're brewing, the time frame, what are you looking at?
6 weeks.
6 weeks.
I try to schedule out about 6 weeks from where I'm, what I'm going to brew for.
Mm-hmm. And you're doing lagers and Kolsch. It's longer
than
that.
I do longer, about 2.5 months.
So that's a long time to stare at that beer and just.
And that's
be
hard,
like,
yes. Hard to do.
Yes.
I'm not going to touch.
That's why
this.
We hide it. You got to hide it.
You
got
to hide it. Yeah. Well, you got to hide it from Tim.
Well, yes. I do my own share too.
No, that's awesome. I think it's great. We're gonna take another quick break, and then we'll come back. I want to talk about you know, some of the homebrew shops that Randy and Betsy are buying their ingredients from, and you know, things have changed a lot in the course of the years. Things are, you know, advanced, and I think that's kind of interesting. And then maybe, you know, they can give some pointers to some homebrewers that are looking to get into it. I think that also is also interesting. But we'll take a quick break. We'll be back in probably about 7 minutes. We're going to play another, yep, Mo song. Go grab your beer, sit back, relax. This is a good tune.
Thank you.
Welcome back, folks. Hope you enjoyed that song. I did. I'm Ken Landon. I am your host of the Hudson Valley Tap Talk Show. I do this the third Tuesday of every month. I hope it's been informative and entertaining. And I'm here today with Betsy and Randy. We're talking homebrew. These guys have been doing it combined 25 years, so I think we got some good expertise here. And I wanted to just talk a little bit about going through their brew schedule again and kind of your shopping list. You decide your style of beer and you kind of go to the homebrew store, right?
That's right.
And kind of give me, tell me what happens there. You're buying your malt, your yeast. Are we getting everything there? I mean, I haven't been a homebrew store in forever.
Yeah, so we've been fortunate in my immediate area. If I go north, we got the Homebrew Emporium up there in East Greenbush.
Yeah.
We've got down in Red Hook, Party Creations. That's where I started out, going to get a lot of recipes and a lot of ingredients. Yeah. And now Keegan's down in Kingston has a homebrew store that's stocked pretty well and very good people to do business with down there.
Now you're purchasing when you go in there, like I said, you got your shopping list. You're getting your hops. You're getting your, as far as your quantities go, and you're measuring out. Give me, I know the tractor trailer pulls up at our brewery and dumps off bags and bags and bags. And you guys are kind of walking around with a shopping cart, right? I mean,
yeah, less than that even.
Yeah.
So on an average brew, your ingredients, how much of what are we putting in?
Well, you got your dry grain. You got any extracts if you're doing an extract or a partial mash?
Yeah, I do mostly partial mashes. So I'm good for about 7-8 pounds of grain and fill that in with some extract.
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever, the yeast. You've got all kinds of places you can go mail order now that use. Yes. They can get the yeast here pretty quick, too, without worrying about getting too warm or too cold.
That's pretty cool. That's come a long way.
Yes, it has. From the dry little packets you used to put on the warm water and the warm wort to now you're pitching your own, and you can even, the self-activated yeast. There's five different ways you can get the yeast now.
Yeah, easy. Yeah.
That's actually pretty cool.
It is.
You know?
That's come a long way in the 20 years.
Do you have a preference as far as what type of yeast you guys are using?
I do a smack pack. I like the smack packs.
I've used liquid. I've used the smack pack.
What's a smack pack?
It's, you got an activator inside the bag, and you have to smack it in order to combine the two ingredients within the bag.
Then it blows up like Jiffy Pop when it's ready to go.
Very cool. Very
it
cool.
Is.
That's interesting, huh? Opposed to the liquid, which is a little bit more delicate, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, you typically then you do a starter.
Yes.
Right on, yeah.
Get as many active cultures as you can going, and then of course I'm lucky. We've got our local craft beer brewery right down the road that I can say, "Hey, Hutch, we got a couple ounces of Simcoe hops."
Yeah,
right. A couple of ounces, right?
Yes.
Opposed to pounds. That's cool.
Exactly.
Yeah. But again, it's the same. It's amazing to me that
it's the same science. Smaller degree.
It's just on a smaller degree, As far as going back to when I know you said that you had bought your husband Tim the system, but what kind of made kind of said to you, you know what, I want to do this, it's like I want to bake a cake, but I want to make beer. I want to make beer.
It sat for almost a year.
You hear that, Tim?
So I said, how hard could it be? And of course, it was an Australian ale, which was delicious, and they hook you right in. And
Yeah.
And you just start, you expand your horizon from there.
They make it very simple for you to do.
Exactly.
Right? So they hook you, and now you're going to start buying more and more. Now, have you upgraded your equipment, or are you still brewing on some of the same things?
I'm still brewing on some of the same things, but what I end up with is from people who stop brewing. I get their equipment. That's how I have expanded. Jason Kinch, I got his equipment. I'll trade off Cornelius's for Carboys with some people.
So you acquire it along the...
So I have probably, I can get two or three batches going at a time.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And that's, that. I know you had, you're a little bit larger, but you had bought some different things.
Yeah, no, my next step is going to a 15-gallon system that I'm going to automate. My expertise at, for the last 25, 30 years has been process automation.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to take it up to a 15-gallon, a kegel system.
With, wow.
You use some old kegs, and it's not serviceable anymore, and make those your boil kettle and your mash tun. And
yeah, you're into it.
Yeah, that's I told it. You. Can't do it just a little bit.
Yeah, you got to jump in.
You do this all at your house? Or?
Yeah. I put in a new basement, which is the, all
he
concrete.
Built a basement around the home roof.
All concrete, so it can be washed down with a high-pressure hose.
Oh, this is serious business. Yeah. He's got the power washer in there. Yep. Louise, don't come down here. You don't hear anything anymore.
I'm really surprised the neighbors haven't called the cops, because I go out in the garage now, and that's my brew area. And all of a sudden, the windows are all steamed up from boiling, and I'm surprised they haven't gotten a visit, but so far we haven't.
Let alone the smell.
Yeah,
the aroma
smell
coming
of it. Yeah,
the
venting out. What's going on in there? He's baking bread. Baking bread. Yeah, I remember when Crossroads opened. That was a big thing. Everybody was afraid of the odor coming out of the brewery, and now it's like the Pied Piper.
Oh, that's
people
good.
Can smell
that's
it.
A good smell.
It is a good smell.
Up in Albany, and they just follow it down.
Yes.
You know, it's really cool. But I started. I didn't do much home brewing. I was actually just more of an observer and a kind of helper with my buddy Chuck from Butternuts when he first started. And I can remember the same thing we were just talking about, drinking a beer when it was a little young, and going through all of that, and everybody wondering why their stomach is hurting, and running to the bathroom, and it's just like, maybe we should have waited.
Yeah.
Yep.
But, we used to just, instead of going to the store and buying six packs, he used to just collect money from everybody. Everybody would throw in what they could, and then he'd go buy the ingredients.
Wow.
And he would just homebrew in his garage, and it was small. I mean, I can't remember if he was getting a couple of six packs out of the brew. That was a lot, and then we would fight for it all. Yeah. So it was a big demand for it even back then. But I'm impressed that how long you've been doing it. And, 20 years is a long time. It's come a long, long way.
Yeah,
I would imagine
it has.
Since then. And you're still enjoying it.
I still love it.
You still
yes,
do
I
it.
Do.
And you're looking to conquer the world now.
Well, I don't know, but and we've got some friends that we camp with every June. We have a craft beer and homebrew beer tasting night when we meet up in the Adirondacks.
That's nice.
And it's grown to, I think we've got 4 homebrewers now that show up, and we have our own little competition amongst ourselves, and everybody brings their local craft beer, so you get to taste a wide variety. There's about 50 or 60 campers that show up.
Wow.
And,
wow.
Yeah, yeah.
It makes for a real fun night. Get to taste things that you normally wouldn't have the opportunity to do.
So there are homebrew clubs out there that you can join. I'm sure you can go to your local homebrew store, and I'm sure they have some information on that, homebrew clubs. I know there's a bunch around. We've hosted a couple of homebrew clubs at the brewery. Come in and they swap their beers and stuff like that. But it's a lot. It's when you really start digging around, it's a lot larger than people realize. There's a lot of people doing this, and I think it's growing leaps and bounds. People are homebrewing, and then the next step is that I guess it's the nano breweries, and then they go. We were talking about this, and I know you said, Randy, 600 gallons by law you can homebrew.
I'm pretty sure that's around
the end. I'm not 100% sure.
I'm almost positive that's what it was.
But that was a law that was passed, I don't know what year, but...
Jimmy Carter passed it, right? Yep.
So once you get above that, you have to go through the licensing process and make sure you move your brewery and all of that. But a lot of these people, what they're doing now is they come up with these nano breweries, and they're legalizing it, and... they're brewing in their shed or in their garage,
yes.
And they're able to sell this stuff, and
yes.
And so it's come a long way, and to call yourself a brewery like that. So yeah, people are really jumping on this bandwagon now with the nano breweries, the homebrew systems, and I think it's really, really cool what's going on and the variety of the beers then and like I said, I've had both you guys beer, and it's good stuff, you know. So you can, although I think the Arum Origin might be a little bit higher on a smaller. You don't have much room to play with,
no,
you know,
not at all.
And so it's a little bit more delicate opposed to. I know the saying is that, you know, in the bigger breweries, if you wreck a beer or if it doesn't come out right, add fruit to it and you can fix it.
It'll be fine.
Yeah, it'll be fine. But in this case, you can't do that.
No,
you know, so you got to be spot on. You know, so you got to have a kind of idea what you're doing.
And there's a saying I think everybody's heard: "Get time cures all." Well, mm-hmm. that most of the time it might help, but it doesn't cure. So you. No matter what you do, it might not taste good. Yeah.
Yeah, it tastes bad. You said you had that one bad batch that came out. But you can definitely taste the difference, you had said, between the forced carbonation or the bottle carbonation.
A bottle conditioned, personally, bottle. Myself, I think it tastes a lot cleaner.
The
forced carbonation at the home level is kind of, you know, there's not an exacting science there. You know, you put X amount of PSI on it for some time period,
right.
and you right. got what you got.
Yeah.
Where the bottle condition, I think, gives you a nicer flavor, I think.
It's more consistent, I think, yeah. also with the bottle.
As far as the bottle conditioned, is it it's obviously self-carbonating within the bottle? Are you
yes.
pitching any additional yeast into the bottles? Or you
typically don't have to.
You don't have to?
No.
Okay.
Might have to add a little
priming sugar.
Yeah.
Just to keep it moving. Yeah.
Keep and then
the
I keep
moving.
It warm.
Which activates the yeast,
yes,
keeps that, yeah, because
yeah.
you don't want that yeast to slow down. You know, I know. The yeast is it's amazing to me.
It is.
It really is. What
that's
it does.
A science all to itself, right
it
there.
Is.
You got to be a chemist.
Absolutely,
you know, you really do. You have to know what's going on
and which temperatures.
The temperatures
for each,
are, yeah,
for
each style
yeast,
of beer.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
that's why. You know, Hutch brews the Saison in the summertime mm-hmm. because that particular yeast strain works better in the warmer temperatures.
Yes.
And, you know, I've learned a lot, too. I mean, I'm far from brewing expertise, but I've learned a lot. And the wild yeasts intrigue me the most,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I know they're a little dangerous as far as, you know, bring them into breweries and, you know, letting them kind of run wild,
yeah,
right,
and contaminating everything that it touches. But that's a whole nother. Have you guys tried that at all?
No,
I have
that?
Not. No.
No.
Any desire to? I mean,
only because of the curiosity factor.
Yeah,
you know, what would it taste like? That's. I mean, that's why we do. I think what we do is
right.
because you got the opportunity to try different things.
Different.
Yeah, and brew the styles that
yep.
you like. But
right.
that wild yeast always. Always intrigued me. We'll talk Hutch into doing something one of these days.
There you go.
We do talk about it a lot, but it's, you know, the cleaning aspect of it goes even above and beyond because
yeah.
you have to kill
everything else.
Everything.
Yep.
And you know, you can only kill it with you know, certain degree temperature of water, and it has
right.
to maintain that. So it's a process, especially with your house yeast in there, because it can contaminate your house yeast.
Yeah.
You know, but no, all cool stuff here, and. I'm talking with Randy and Betsy, homebrewers. I was going to open up the phones, but I don't think I'm going to be able to figure it out. I do know how to do it. Let me see. Maybe I'll take a quick break. Let me try and see if we can. I'm going to play one more tune. We got a few more minutes left with these guys. Let me see if I can get these phones open for a quick second and get a call in. If not, we'll get some more info out of them. I hope everybody's enjoying it on a homebrew level. And we'll get them to tell us what, if you're interested in getting involved in this, you know, what it takes and the dedication and where you can buy some of your stuff and all that good stuff. So enjoy your beer. Hopefully everyone's drinking one. We'll be back in a flash. We'll be right back.
cowboy boots upon his feet. Look both ways before you cross the street. Are you flying like a superstar? Off the third of some offending car. The ambulance came right away. Across the street I heard him say, "Hell, I got hit by a car. You're a good friend, hell, that's what you are. Cause I creep alone, you can't keep him down. Who will mind the storm? Kyle's out of town. Crushed like creep alone. You can't keep them down. Who am I to store? Kyle's out of town. Kyle got hurt. His victim badge. He's an Eagle Scout with broken bones, eating burger sets and ice cream cones. Nymphatic clubs seem far away, but I swear I still can't hear him say, "Al, I got hit by a car. You're a good friend, Al, that's what you are. Crush my dreams alone, you can't keep them down. Kyle's out of town. Cuts like green galore. You can't keep him down. Who will mind the store?
Hey, 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 folks. Welcome back to Hudson Valley Tap Talk Show. I'm Ken Landon. I'm here with Betsy and Randy, homebrewers. We just had an interesting conversation. I think this might be something that can interest some folks. Randy, why don't you go ahead and, well, both you guys, tell me what we were just talking about.
Well, we were just amongst ourselves talking about any active clubs, homebrew clubs that were in the area. And it seems like, the Catskill, Hudson, Coxsackie, Athens area doesn't seem to be much activity. I know there is some very active club south and some very active club north, but, you know, wanted to throw out if there would be, wondering if there would be interest from other home brewers that are in the area to maybe have an informal get-together down at Crossroads some evening and talk about trying to get some activity in the area.
Change, some sort of homebrew club.
Yeah, exchange some ideas, see what other people are doing, how they're doing it.
See, some good things do come out of beer, right? We saw it. We have, Randy and Betsy here willing to, lend their expertise as far as homebrewing goes. And not only that, but put their contact information out there. And like Randy said, we can try and gather up some interesting parties. So, you're willing to put your email out there.
Yeah, I can be reached at Finley, Finley, at localnet.com. And any interest will... Betsy said she'd be willing to meet down at the brewery some night, some evening possibly, and get together and just talk home brew.
Yeah, no, that's cool. That's cool. Give your email again. Say it slow so people can get it. Now, obviously, don't email gibberish to him. He's a busy guy, and he's putting his email contact information out there. All right? What we're going to try and attempt to do, or at least Betsy and Randy are going to attempt to do, is put together some interesting home brew participants. And maybe even eventually form some sort of club in the Hudson Valley, combine some clubs if there is people who do, maybe there is some sort of small club out there already.
Yeah, we could be a northern version or a southern version of something that's already established. Yeah. That could possibly work too.
I think that's awesome. So give your email again real slow
and
people.
My expertise also is in the web and the internet, so I can cancel the account at any time, so it's not a big deal. But it is Finley, Finley, at localnet.com. And we'll set up a night.
Awesome. That's great. I want to thank you guys for taking the time out of your days. I know you both work. You have full-time jobs on top of your passion for homebrewing. I can't thank you enough for coming in and joining me today. I hope everybody out there enjoyed the show. Contact Randy. I think this could be a very, very interesting and cool thing that they can start doing here. And on behalf of myself, I'm Ken Landon. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And I will be back here the third Tuesday in February. I don't know the date. I will get it out there on the website, and I'm really excited to have Jeff O'Neill from Peekskill Brewery. He's going to be joining me next month. So hopefully everybody tunes in. Have a great day. Be safe, be careful, and drink good beer. Bye-bye.